Hello, this is Matt Schlick from the Matt Schlick Live podcast, where I defend the Christian faith and lay out our foundations of the truth of God's Word. Your chosen Truth Network podcast is starting in just a few seconds. Enjoy it, share it, but most of all, thank you for listening and for choosing the Truth Podcast Network.
This is the Truth Network. Once a world champion wrestler, now a champion for Christ. Once the Russian nightmare, now the devil's worst nightmare. And your tag team partner, Nikita Koloff. It's time to man up.
Coming up today, a story of inspiration from tragedy to triumph. Hey, listen carefully to Magnum TA's story as he explains how professional wrestling was a building block to him becoming a real hero, not in the ring, outside the ring. Stay tuned. Well, I want to welcome you back to It's Time to Man Up, Nikita Koloff, the devil's worst nightmare. That's right. But today, what a special treat for me today as I introduce our guest today. Any of you who followed wrestling, or as we say sometimes in the South, wrestling, I have with me today such a special friend, Magnum TA, Terry Allen. Terry, welcome to the show.
My friend, I could not be any happier to be here and be with you. And whenever I get to share a few moments of my day with you, it's like a breath of fresh air.
Well, I appreciate it. I do. And we'll talk a little bit about that and cover some of that, how we remain friends today from our introduction really years ago through the ranks of professional wrestling. But before we get to that, you know, I was trying to do a little research on you to give our listeners a little backdrop for those who maybe don't know, you know, aren't familiar with Magnum TA, or as you know, I used to, back in the day, call Maggot TA. Right. One of my favorite lines when we were arch nemesis. But I was doing a little background here, and you may, if I did my research right, going back to your high school days up in Virginia, what I found was Norfolk Collegiate School in Norfolk, Virginia, where But you were a member of the collegiate wrestling team. You won a state championship at 167-pound division, if I did my homework right.
That's true.
Tell our listeners a little bit about your formative years up there in the Chesapeake area.
Well, wrestling was like a beacon for me that kept me on the path, much like other people that choose sports like you did, like football.
Right.
For me, I got introduced to wrestling in a gym class in the eighth grade, and I had no natural aptitude towards it, anything else. But to me, it was just a fascinating challenge. And it was something that I was part of, like the inaugural team that my school put together, the very first wrestling team they had, because their big deal had always been basketball. They were basketball conference champions and all this kind of stuff. So the wrestling for me was, like I said, it was just a great challenge, personal challenge for me myself to be, to better myself and try to become a champion. But even more so than that, I was almost like the old comic strip with the 80-pound weakling that got sand kicked in his face.
Right.
I couldn't hardly do a push-up in the eighth grade, and I was just not a natural athlete. And I formed myself and melded myself into a champion over a 4-year period of time. And as you pointed out, I won the state championship my senior year at 167 pounds and built a real strong basis for myself physically that I obviously built on, in later years. But it was that love of the amateur wrestling that made me maintain the grades and went to a college preparatory school that was really tough to begin with. And you had to maintain at least a C average to be able to play sports. And so I had to hit the books and do things that I otherwise wouldn't have been as interested in if it weren't for the fact that I wanted to compete at athletics and particularly in wrestling. So I did wrestling from like October till the end of February. And then I did track and field in the spring. So it kept me on the right path through the high school years for sure.
Well, so it kept you focused. And yeah, I can certainly relate to that with my love for weightlifting and bodybuilding at a very young age, seventh grade for me. And then football as well. But you bring up a couple interesting points on how, I mean, just the value of competitive athletics at such a young age for us and how it does, right? It keeps you focused for many of the athletes, keeps them focused and driven to, as you said, driven to study and at least a C average, if not higher, but so that you can be a part of the team and be able to compete. And so you got the opportunity, what I'm hearing, to really pioneer that whole wrestling program for your school.
I did, and I learned about, you know, building blocks and foundations and how, you know, there's a lot of people that sit around and dream about achieving something, but they don't have any idea a path of how to get there. And athletics, you know, teaches you a path. You know, if the first time you walk to the gym, you know, you generally don't pick up 300 pounds and be able to bench press it. You start where your baseline is and you work and you go through different things and you build yourself up to try to achieve a goal. And the athletics obviously did that, you know, for me, did it for you. And I lost every single match that I had my freshman year with the exception of the last match that I won, which was like, you know, I thought I'd won the Super Bowl. I was so excited about it.
Yeah.
But then again, by the time I was a senior, I pinned everybody that I wrestled in the state tournament in less than a total of 6 minutes for the entire tournament. And it was, a journey that was, you know, seemed really crazy at the time because of the transformation that I had made in such a relatively short number of years. But really it was just the preface of what was yet to come because, my life was really on this meteor-type rise that I really had no idea where it was going at that particular time in my life because it's just, you know, when you look back at the time frames that I was involved in amateur athletics and then, you know, less than 5 years graduated, you know, main eventing in the professional wrestling world, things like that just don't ordinarily happen.
Right. And we're certainly going to get to that. We want to talk about that as well. It's interesting. There is a parallel course there. I really marvel, honestly, at those of you with the amateur background in wrestling, because I didn't have that. So if those who know my story or some who've heard my story or will, you know, hear about it or read about my story, In fact, shortly here, I'm going to be coming out with a revision of my last book, Nikita, A Tale of the Ring and Redemption, that's going to share more of my story. We wrote about 6 or 7 or 8 new chapters, including some stories from fans, from other people that maybe watched my career. But I say all that to say, I marvel at you guys because I know we competed against a number of guys, whether it was a Brad Rangens or a Mike Rotundo, Steiner Brothers. I mean, there were different guys who had, you know, Dr. Death Steve Williams, who I know you know very well, that had that background. And I used to joke with those guys and say, like, hey, don't be trying to shoot any single legs on me or put any of them chicken wings, whatever you call them moves, because I'm here on the entertainment side of this. I'll clearly let you get your hand raised and I'll go back to the dressing room because I'm like, man, I know you guys could tie me up like a pretzel, you know. And so certainly admire all of you guys that had that amateur background. But that, you know, that brings up an interesting point you just made, how you went from, as you kind of described, this 80-pound weakling, if you will, when you were pioneering the school wrestling program, to becoming really, if you want to say, 167-pound state champion. You kind of maybe doubled your weight, or at least, as you said, had a rocket ship career there. But that really is interesting because that parallels, you mentioned, your professional career. before we really jump into that, did you always want to be a professional wrestler? I know some do, some did, some don't. Or when did you first kind of fall in love with professional wrestling?
I fell in love with it as a fan of it when I was young. When I was like, my earliest memories of watching TV with my dad, probably 6-7 years old, was watching Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling with him on Saturday nights. So I watched it, and to me, it was like watching, any of my superhero type shows, because those guys were heroes and villains, and just like watching the Lone Ranger or a John Wayne movie or anything else from that era that I came up. You always knew who the bad guys were, the good guys were, and I enjoyed watching it from a entertainment type perspective. But I never really, as a kid, imagined being able to do something like that. And then when I got into the amateur wrestling, my focus was very much just on that. Dan Gable was my hero back then. I'd read his book after he'd won the 73 Olympics, and he was the big inspirational motivator in my life to try to aspire to be, you know, one-tenth the amateur wrestler that he was. And I was building towards that thought process to want to go to the Olympics one day. And in 1980, if you remember, that was the year we boycotted the Olympics.
Yeah.
And I was also in the process of growing, because I had dieted my entire, you know, high school career to stay down to, at 167 pounds. And I even wrestled 167 my freshman year in college. And then all of a sudden, like, the cork came off. I started working out with some guys that were power lifters and bodybuilders and eating a wholly, completely different kind of diet than I'd ever eaten in my life. And all of a sudden, in one summer, I went from 167 to like 215.
Wow.
It's somebody exploded. Pulled the cork out.
And yeah, me, right.
Go. Right, because I had like basically starved myself for years. And so it changed my focus, because there wasn't really a happy place for me to be at that weight that I was at in amateur wrestling. And back then, heavyweights were, there wasn't a limit. There was guys like Chris Taylor weighed 400 pounds.
Right. You know? I remember.
And so, you know, I wasn't in that range, and it was like, you know, I was kind of at a crossroads, but I was working security, bouncing in nightclubs while I was going to college. And the pro guys were coming in at one of the nightclubs in Virginia Beach where I worked. And simultaneously, in one of the Virginia papers, they wrote an article about professional wrestling. And for the first time, I looked at it like a business opportunity, because they were talking about guys making six figures. And this is 1979. And I'm going, six figures, you know, that in 79, you were a millionaire to me if you were making six figures. So the light bulb went off. The opportunity all of a sudden looked like something I potentially could do, because of this new group I was running with and getting bigger, you know, by the month. And so it wasn't until I was like 19 years old, almost 20, that I even, you know, gave professional wrestling a real hard look as a potential for a career.
Okay. And if I'm not mistaken, Old Dominion University is where you were wrestling in college, correct?
Exactly. And Billy Robertson, Billy Martin Jr. was my coach, and his dad was a legendary coach from Granby that was famous for inventing a move called the Granby Roll that all the, you know, kids were doing back in the 70s that came out of his camp. And I still had a passion for it, still loved it. But in thinking about a life and a career and realizing that, you know, the Olympic dream wasn't probably going to be in the making, particularly with the fact that we weren't going to have, there wasn't going to be an Olympics for the U.S. in 1980, then that certainly just like flipped a switch. So I started looking at the next move and what I could do to have a, you know, career.
Right. For the listeners out there, if you're not familiar with the name Dan Gable, who Magnum is referring to, I encourage you to research, Google his name. But, well, that's interesting. So you are now entertaining this idea. You're meeting professional wrestlers. You see this article, and so now you're contemplating, considering, and you eventually jump into the world of professional wrestling, and you dominate it, really, from what I can tell, almost out of the gate. In looking at some of your history in Florida Championship Wrestling, in Mid-South Championship Wrestling, Cowboy Bill Watson, eventually where you and I would meet in the Mid-Atlantic Wrestling that you and I would meet up. But just briefly, give us a little quick history on Florida and Mid-South.
Well, it was when I got to Florida, I had actually been in the business for a year. I broke in Portland, Oregon, under Don Owens, and I was there for 6 months just working underneath, journeyman type thing, trying to learn the ropes. And 6 months there, hopped down to Texas, and 6 months with Joe Blanchard in San Antonio and his organization. And while there, I meet this young man named Mike Graham. Mike Graham, the son of Eddie Graham, who owned and ran Florida Championship Wrestling. And Mike and I hit it off like we were brothers, like we'd known each other our entire life. And Mike said, I'm bringing you to Florida. We're going to do this. It's going to be great. And we did. He brought me to Florida. He was good to his word, and they treated me like gold and taught me things that, I got a crash course on psychology and everything that about the wrestling profession that, you know, you couldn't pay a professor to teach you. But I had Eddie, Mike's dad, in my ear every night talking to me about what it took to be successful in the business, critiquing not only what I did, but stood there with me while we watched everybody's matches, told me what was good, what wasn't good. And it was, like I said, it was just a great education. And 6 months after being in Florida, I meet the bigger-than-life personality that we both know so well, the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. And Dusty and I became almost instantaneously tied at the hip and just developed an amazing friendship outside of the ring. I wrestled for another year in Florida, you know, with Dusty, learning more and more about what I needed to do to be successful. Then I got the opportunity to go to Mid-South, and Mid-South where the Magnum TA persona came to life. And it was at the recommendation of none other than Andre the Giant. He had come up with his name one night while we were having breakfast. Said, I look kind of like that Tom Selleck guy that was on Magnum PI back in the day.
Right.
He came up with the handle, the name. I didn't know what that meant. It sounded good. Magnum TA sounded really good.
Yeah.
Didn't know what the character was going to be. But, again, you jumped off the cliff and built your wings on the way down and dove headlong into the opportunity, and it worked. It was amazing.
If you feel you're receiving value from this show, it's time to man up. And you'd like to support the show along with Koloff for Christ Ministries, go to koloff.org, koloff.org, and make a donation of any amount. A note, you want my latest book, and you'll receive a personalized copy of Nikita, A Tale of the Ring and Redemption. Yeah, and because you would eventually come to the Mid-Atlantic where you and I would meet. And, of course, the number one by the wrestling fan, the number one most mentioned thing when I'm out and about talking to fans or signing autographs and doing legend signings and all that that you and I still do today, all these years later, who would ever thunk of that? But we do, thank God. Thank you, Lord. But we have these legendary matches, this best of seven, this creative idea, again, of Dusty's that puts together this series, best of seven. And for sake of time, folks, you'll just have to go research that. And you can watch matches on the WWE Network and all of that, the best of seven. But your career is skyrocketing. Here's where I want to get to. Your career is skyrocketing. You're being groomed to become World Heavyweight Champion, NWA Heavyweight Champion, what would become WCW for our listeners, and a program with Ric Flair. And in the midst of that, tragedy strikes, the rug's kind of pulled out from underneath you. And by the way, I was personally shocked when I was first made aware of this. I had just come back from a tour in Japan. I remember I was in Philadelphia. Dusty and Jimmy Crockett pulled me aside and say, you had this accident, you had had this wreck, and I it took them a while to convince me, but once they did, I was just kind of shocked by that. But I want to lead that to this question. The original diagnosis was quadriplegic. You're going from this skyrocketing professional wrestling career to this rug being pulled out from under you. How did you cope in those early days of that diagnosis, Terry?
Well, sometimes ignorance is bliss. And I never lost consciousness when I had this accident. So, I'm laying on the floor of this car paralyzed. I've hydroplaned on a wet road, hit my head on the roof of the car on a broadside telephone pole. I know I'm hurt really bad, but I don't know what's wrong. And, a few hours later, I'm laying on a gurney in a hospital with a guy who's brilliant neurosurgeon over top of me telling me, just what you said, that I'm a quadriplegic, that my chances of ever doing anything other than sitting up in a chair and being spoon-fed are about 1,000,000 to 1. I mean, I'm in pretty bad shape. My C5 vertebrae had exploded in the collision that I was in. And, for me, it was like everything I'd done my entire life had led up to that moment. All the work from the days of not being able to do a push-up to going through all the grueling hours in the mat room, to the weight room, to all the other things that I'd done led me up to this greatest challenge of all time in proving these doctors wrong. Because I'm saying to myself, they don't know me. They don't know what I'm made of. They don't know what I've been through. To make that kind of decision and statement is just really brash. And in hindsight, now knowing what I know about the kind of injury, I know exactly why they said it, because what they said was absolutely true. People do not walk away from things like that. It's too devastating of an injury. But I had decompression surgery done within about 8 hours of the accident, and they took the pressure off my spine. And when I woke up, I was immediately able to move my left arm just a little bit, which was like a miracle in and of itself. And, I never said, God, why me? Why this?
Yeah.
Take this away from me. I said, please just give me the strength to persevere and do whatever it takes that I've got to do what's ahead of me.
Right.
And I remember it vividly. I remember saying that prayer more times than I can tell you, because I was 30 days in an ICU with a person on either side of me, both of which died. And I was the only one that came out of that little unit. And then I was a total of 5 months in the hospital, at which time I walked out under my own power. And it's by the grace of God that I was able to do all this.
Right.
He gave me the strength and he gave me the perseverance, but more than that, gave me a purpose so far greater than anything I had done in all the accolades and the millions of people that watched us every week on the wrestling program and whatnot, because I played a hero on TV, and all of a sudden I'm getting hundreds of thousands of letters from people that their hero's gone down. And they've never known me to be anything but what they perceived and saw on television. So I had a choice. I could take all the meds and all the things that were being offered up to me to try to overcome the pain and become just a babbling idiot and not be able to be productive at all. Or I could dig in and try to come back and with some dignity and show people that, through the greatest of adversities, you can persevere and you can find a way, maybe not a way to do things the way you once did, but a way to be successful and a way to still bring honor to the things you are trying to accomplish.
Right.
And give a different kind of message and be an inspiration and a different level. And for me, it wasn't just so much the level of wanting to be back out in the public eye, which I did for quite a bit, for about a year and a half or a couple of years. I did, dabbled in doing things on television and things just so people would see that I didn't just fold up and quit and give up on life. But the day to day is where the greatest testimony of what you put into practice is all about. Well, so I've been in the construction business. I've been in telecom. I've been in lots of things for the last 30-some years. And I never asked anything extra of anyone. I found ways to make other people comfortable seeing that I can accomplish things that they're not sure exactly how I do. But the fact of the matter is, just by going through life, I realize that you have more chance to touch people and inspire people and help people overcome than I ever would have imagined just being in the world of sports entertainment.
Well, your story does that. We're going to have you back again because we are out of time. But I'm going to summarize by saying this. What you just said for our listeners out there, just be encouraged. I mean, it was your faith that helped sustain you through life's tragedy. And I think what you just said, Terry, will be a real encouragement to someone out there maybe going through a very similar thing right now or maybe going through a hardship in the future. But I can't thank you enough for just sharing your heart and sharing some of your story today. And I know it's going to be an inspiration and an encouragement to many others. And we're going to have you back on, okay? Will you come back on sometime?
Absolutely, my friend. You just call and I'll be here.
All right. Well, folks, thanks for tuning in to It's Time to Man Up. Magnum TA, Terry Allen. Tune in next week for another great story. God bless you.
Men, I would like to challenge each of you to consider spending 5 days with Lex Luger and I at Man Camp, pursuing the heart of God. Ladies, if you're listening, we'll send your men home better equipped to be men of God, godly husbands and godly fathers. If that appeals to you, give them your blessing and encourage them to sign up today at mancamp.info. Pastors, if you would like to bring Koloff for Christ Ministries and Man Up Conference to your community, go to koloff.org and email me. Remember this, it's time to man up.
This is the Truth Network.